You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, four South Dakota towns became local news deserts. The News Media Corporation closed without warning the Brookings Register, Huron Plainsman, Moody County Enterprise, and Redfield Press. So for this week's Dakota Political Junkies conversation, we called in the expert, Kevin Wooster, longtime journalist in the state of South Dakota. He joined me from SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Let's start with how it was done, how quickly it was done with very little notice for the employees or the communities.
My understanding is that they just, that some of them, that it was on social media before they got the official notice from this News Media Corporation based in Illinois, and that they were shutting them down. And so suddenly the Brookings Register and the Huron Plainsman, Redfield Press and the Moody County Enterprise, they were done. And there was no advanced warning, as I, you know, to me it was just horrible that you can't give human beings a couple of weeks, a month, say we're probably going to be shutting this thing down, so you better start making other plans. Not certain that they're going to get all the money that they're due, even their pay, that the corporation said we hope to, we'll try, but... Mm-hmm. So suddenly a bunch of journalists, a bunch of people that worked at these papers were out of a job, bang, in a day.
Yeah. Subscribers don't get refunds for their subscriptions, but employees are going to be out of health insurance and their paychecks for a time they've already worked.
Yeah, all of a sudden.
Yeah, possibly.
And, you know, so suddenly they're having not just to think about other jobs, but to think about health care coverage and...
Right.
You know, whether they've got financial savings, you know, things set that they can go for a while or not.
And let's be honest, if you're working at a local newspaper, you know, you can be very thrifty and thoughtful with your money, but you're probably not pulling an executive level salary either. So these are probably not super high paying jobs.
No. And I mean, I always tried to have a few months in reserve. People always tell you that, but that's hard to get, especially when you're younger and or if you started a family and you've got a new mortgage and got a car payment and things. Now, having said that, and we'll talk, you and I, maybe a little bit about, you ask yourself, how in the world can a paper in Brookings, home to the largest university in the state, all the things going on there, which seems like a thriving downtown area and a business community, how can they not support a newspaper?
Mm-hmm.
And now there's some indication. Last night I saw on social media, Josh Linneman, the managing editor, said that he has been contacted by a number of people about maybe a way to hold on to a paper there.
Right.
He's not ready to talk about it, maybe you see that, but that he's going to be making some kind of an announcement pretty soon, he hopes.
Yeah.
And we all hope. It would be great if that paper could come back or something like it could come start up.
Yeah, so a couple things are happening here. One, it happened without notice. Again, to your point, there wasn't a lot of time to build the kind of community support that might be required. It's an out-of-state company that specializes in rural newspapers. Out-of-state is tough. If you don't have, you go to the grocery store, you're going to see the editor of the paper and some of the reporters, but you're not going to necessarily see the publisher. And that makes it a whole lot easier for a publisher to make a decision about what happens in a community.
Oh, man, it does. And what you said there makes me think about a paper that is making it. And there are a few of them, and I think, you know, we should talk about it. Mitchell Daily Republic seems to be doing okay at this point. And the Black Hills Pioneer, I had a social media message back and forth with Letty Lister over there, who I think is just a really exceptional publisher. And they maintain... six FTE reporters there, which I think maybe more than the Rapid City Journal has anymore. We had 16 at one time when I was there. And she called it a fierce commitment to local news. She's the publisher, and to your point, you do see her in the grocery store. You do see her in places. And when you come to their office, and I've been there, you're greeted by a human being at the front who knows the area, who's willing to handle your problems. Mm-hmm. The at staff, same way. They're out in the community all the time. They're part of the community. They have full-time graphic designers still there, which to me is almost unheard of in a newspaper anymore, that you'd have that. They do little things that are important things. They have columnists. They have correspondence. They maintain that. My wife, for the last 2 years, as you know, Mary's a retired journalist, and she has done play reviews for them for the Black Hills Playhouse. Remember, play mm-hmm. reviews used to be just a normal part of most newspapers if
right.
there was
yeah.
a theater group around.
Yeah.
And
boy, in Sioux Falls, Anne Gravigal would walk in the theater and people get nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she was going to tell the world how the show was the next
yeah.
day, and she
yeah.
was going to mean it.
Yeah, she would. And sometimes yeah. there'd be a hard stone in her writing
yeah.
about a certain thing.
We had critics at one
yeah.
point. And, you know, just a quick sidebar, a good critic, a good arts critic in a community makes art better.
It does. She does.
A good
he
sports
does.
Reporter will, yeah. you know, make this, will elevate the level of, you know, college or high school athletics. And,
yeah.
you know, so it's not just the daily news.
Yeah.
It's also some of those things that are happening in a newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to be part of your community. And it's
yeah.
it's a challenge. As Letty was saying, it's a challenge. And when you have things like added things like on and off tariffs and affecting newsprint and things like
yeah.
that, it adds more to this very thin margin that they have and they maintain. But if you read that paper, and I think you could say much the same about the Mitchell Republic. I always want to say Daily Republic, which it used to be. It's not really daily anymore. It's
mm-hmm.
in terms of print, it's daily online, obviously. But I think they're connection with Forum Communications and their connection with Sioux Falls Live, and I think you can buy one or the other and you get both and you get access
yeah.
to Forum. But also have a guy named Luke Hagan there who's a big fisherman. He's a guide on the Missouri River, and he understands the area and is committed to the area and loves the area. And again, you see those people in the community, and it's now that wonderful old brick building, the Mitchell Republic building, is no longer the Mitchell Republic, which is sad. They've moved, as the Argus and the Journal have done, to mm-hmm. other quarters and a lot of home work, I think.
And something is lost there, too. I mean, something is lost.
Gosh.
I mean, if you're not in a newsroom, what was it like being in
yeah.
a newsroom? I always freelanced
yeah.
when I did print, so I was rarely in the newsroom, so I was kind of doing a remote work before it was cool. But being in the newsroom makes a big difference to the kind of work that you do. How so?
Oh, man. And no other place like it in my experience. I've been in a lot of work environments as a reporter, but the kinds of personalities you find there, the kind of cynical, but suspicious, but also outgoing, and all different kinds. And then the community is in and out of a newsroom all the time. I
yeah.
mean, the elected officials stop by, federal, state, local, people with complaints, people who are unhappy with your column the night before, they come to the front desk and say, hey, Wooster, you got somebody down here who wants to talk to you? You get on and talk to them.
Yeah.
And they may not, it might not be a pleasant conversation, or it might be a great conversation. And when I drove by, you know, the Journal now is in kind of a strip mall upstairs, what's left of it, in a little office. And, you know, God bless those mostly young journalists who are just trying their best to, you know, under-resourced and trying to do their job. But if I've been there a couple of times, the door was locked, nobody was there. There was none of that stop by and chat, or if you got a complaint about subscription or delivery or things.
Right.
You know, Dave Krantz, one time we got a call on a Saturday morning at the Argus Leader of a woman who, with a door, somebody, the paper boy, left her newspaper and stuffed it in the door, and the wind blew it open and broke the screen door window, the outdoor, the glass in the door. And Krantz took a newspaper over to her and swept up the glass for her and helped her clean up the mess. And, you know, that's service that doesn't exist in
yeah.
most places
so
anymore.
So what the heck happened? I mean, and the business model for sure gets a lot of talk about, but, you know, a reporter who will get in the car and go sweep up the glass and hand someone a paper, that probably isn't super common either.
Well, no, because
yeah.
I was dodging that call every time. I was in there on Saturday
Dave
morning
Krantz,
to get some work done. So were the other reports. We'd be the last person to answer that phone before it was if it didn't get to circulation.
Kranz okay, would just fair take enough. It. That's just a, you know, an outlier story.
Kranz would take it. Now, if I got cornered, it depends. If I wasn't on too tight a deadline or stuff, right, but yeah. Kranz was always take the call. He would always do that, and there were different types of personalities in the newsroom.
Yeah.
But what happened? Oh, man. I mean, it's easy to blame the corporations. The thing is, I worked for Gannett and Lee, and for a time, both of them put a lot of money into the publications at the Argus Leader in Sioux Falls and the Rapid City Journal here. They sent writing coaches in, and they sent mm-hmm. people off to seminars, and you thought, okay, this corporation's not bad. But as things started to tighten, and they wanted to continue to give more and more to their shareholders, their stockholders,
yeah.
and it seemed like they were unrealistic in what they expected, they started to make, to me, really unwise decisions on what you cut and how you cut. And then the whole thing with the internet, and do we give our stuff away online for free? There's all kinds of free stuff out there. A lot of us were concerned initially when we started putting stuff up, our news, our columns up on the internet for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of thought that was a bad idea, and they tried to reel it back in and put stuff behind a paywall, some stuff that was premium behind a paywall, other stuff you could have, and then eventually all right. the stuff. And I don't know if it would have made a great deal of difference or not, because you've got this, you know, a couple generations of readers that don't believe, apparently, professionally produced news is worth paying for.
Well, I want to add something to that, and that is the public library. So now, if you want to go, you know, before, if you wanted to read the newspaper in your hometown and you didn't want to pay for it, you could go to the public library and you could read it. Now, mm-hmm. you have to go to the public library, log on, and, you know, have a library card and enter to, you know, if they have a subscription to it, and get it that way, you might not necessarily get the print, and that is way more complicated. Mm. Now you have to sign up for a computer, and you have to know how to use the computer. Librarians are helping you do this and all that stuff. But the idea of having a local newspaper that would be left behind at a frying pan that you could flip through, the access, that's part of what gave it the idea that it was accessible. You know, somebody was getting paid for it. There was a business model, but you also had ways to access it for free.
Sure.
Quality news needs to be supported financially, but also needs to have an avenue for people who cannot afford it to read it, and that is the public library.
Yeah, and now that I mention it, I haven't looked at our library for, I don't know, it's been quite a while. They used to have a bunch of papers down there, and I would go down and read those papers so I could hold print products.
Yeah, everybody would be down there reading those. Yeah.
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 Yeah, everybody, including some of the people that are unhoused, would be reading newspapers. And
it's where you looked for job postings. It's where you looked for apartment rentals. All these things were free. And now, you got to have a phone. How much is that costing you? There's a new
and
model.
To your point, every restaurant, every hotel, either they had a stack of them on the counter at the motel or hotel that you mm-hmm. could, if you stayed there, you could have, but then they were all just sitting around the lobby and stuff that you could read, and businesses had them out if you're waiting for something or you had a doctor's appointment. The newspapers were everywhere.
Yeah.
Part of your life.
I want to also talk about what happens in those communities, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment. My guest is Kevin Looster for our Dakota Political Junkies conversation today. We're talking about these four South Dakota newspapers who are closing suddenly in Huron, Redfield, Brookings, and Flandreau, the Moody County enterprise there, without warning, which also, Kevin, presents a problem for city and county government because of legal notices in some cases.
Oh, yeah. Legal notices are an issue, and I think it was, one of the people that had been, one of the city officials had been using the daily or the more frequently, not necessarily every day, but to go to a weekly from that more frequent distribution would delay certain things, and they were concerned about that. And I think some of them maybe wouldn't even have access then to a legal newspaper in the county. I think
right.
there are, I don't know. I think Dave Bordewijk had said that 40 have closed, 40 newspapers have closed roughly
since
in
the
South
90s,
Dakota.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's that, the legal issue. There's, of course, the accountability issue. I spoke to a guy here who was trying to, a friend of mine who was going to try to develop a gravel pit on property he owns east of Box Elder and lost out on a 3-2 vote in the county commission. And he said there was no reporter there at the meetings and that they had a pretty good argument to sell about saving money and wouldn't have to haul gravel for some far away, and they were going to shut down if growth came near to where they were operating. But he said nobody heard that argument, and so his argument was the naysayers had all the weight because they showed up. And he said it was just another example of, he said maybe they would have made the same decision, but more people would have been involved in making it and expressing things and knowing about it.
Yeah.
And
the impact on our civic life is huge.
It is, yeah.
So, you mentioned Dave Bordewijk and some of the Facebook comments, and I referenced in getting ready for our conversation today, of course, Public Broadcasting's reporting, but also South Dakota Searchlight's reporting on this by John Hult. And a lot of great information in one place as a nonprofit newsroom. So as these, so there's a for-profit newspaper like the Dakota Scout, there's nonprofit like South Dakota Searchlight and South Dakota Newswatch. We're still holding on by the fingernails to Public Broadcasting. What is the future? There are some community newspapers really held up by volunteerism in South Dakota, which is great, but also tenuous for a number of reasons. News is a professional. People have degrees in news often, and professional editing matters. And so I'm not sure volunteerism can be 100% where you go. Certainly there's editorial oversight. What is the future of this as we try to redefine how people get their news?
And as an aside, you mentioned professional editing.
Yeah.
One of the first things we cut at the Journal, or our publisher cut, was the copy desk.
Yeah.
And I remember the publisher walked in and looked around, and there were four or five copy editors sitting there. God bless those people. They took such good care of me over the years. And she said, why do we need all these copy editors? And the reporters all looked with shocked and struck with fear. I don't know about any of the rest of you, but I need them.
Yeah.
And pretty soon they were gone, and that showed up in the newspaper with
I used to read the newspaper article until I got to an error, and then I would stop reading out of frustration when that was happening. I was like, well, I'll read until someone makes a mistake. You didn't get very far through any of the articles because those copy editors were gone.
My colleague Bill Harlan called that performing without a net, and it was not something you particularly wanted to do. But, that was one of the first things that was cut. Now, what train of thought did I take us away from that we were on?
The future. Nonprofit news, for-profit, independent startups.
When you and I were going...
Public broadcasting or public news.
Well, first of all, I have to up my giving to public broadcasting, and I'm glad you reminded me of that. And so does all the people listening. But when we were texting back and forth yesterday a little bit, you raised an issue that I think is interesting, are the nonprofits, which are really good, doing nice work with actual former newspaper reporters and other types of reporters, radio reporters and things. Are they good for the papers or are they tough on the papers? Do they give people another free option for news? That's a complicated question, because they fill in some of those gaps that I'm happy about. I'm happy that's people like Seth and all the others that are doing this work are doing it and making it available to newspapers. And I know people that read the Journal and are always quoting Searchlight or Newswatch stories that they read in the Journal.
Yeah.
They actually don't go on the website very much. They see them in the Journal. They're old traditionalists.
Yeah. It's a print product.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's great that the papers have that. If you're down to four reporters, which the Journal was not too long ago, I think, if I remember talking to them, from 13, 14, 15, or 16, you just can't cover this stuff.
Right.
And if Newswatch and Searchlight can fill in some of those gaps, it's wonderful. Right. And I never thought about it until you and I had the exchange, but does that lead some people away from subscribing to those papers?
My question is, respectfully, because I think they're doing great work, and I reference mm-hmm. them often and read them all.
As I do.
If I drive across the state of South Dakota and stop in small towns, as I often do, and pick up their local newspapers and see what's happening, I'm often reading the same story that is, and I'm not getting that local news. Where you used to be able to stop at, you know, I'm going to get some coffee at a place in Clear Lake, and then I'm going to look at the newspaper, and I'm going to get something about what's happening in that town. Not so much anymore. So some of the content is being, the column inches are being used for the same story, town to town, which is a service, but also is complicated.
Yeah. Now I would say that the readers in Chamberlain, if they use that, and the readers in, Platt, the main probably aren't the same readers, or Mobridge, or wherever they're using it, Yankton and Rapid City, certainly. Right. But
if I'm the publisher, I don't need to hide. I mean, I can cut my staff because it's all I have to do. I could become a print shop for the nonprofit newsrooms in South Dakota and fill my pages, which is not the same as local news.
I would tell you that I think they weren't getting the local news anyway, because one of the complaints I heard about the Journal was from the people that are still reading it, the Mays brothers, Terry and Larry, as you know, my buddy and your fishing guides.
They're very good day fishing.
you killed them. And they complained for a while that what they were getting was all stuff out of Montana and Wyoming. Mm. And I think probably the Wyoming and Montana people were complaining they were getting too much stuff out of South Dakota, because the local daily wasn't able to fill their news hole all the time with local stuff. So they were picking up other stuff, AP stuff out of Nebraska or whatever. So if you can get a Newswatch story out of South Dakota, a Searchlight story out of South Dakota instead of that, I think that's a plus.
Yeah. So what else happens next? So we have the rise of nonprofit. We have some for-profit news organizations starting up and trying to expand. There's a lot of good news coverage in the state. I don't want to say that's not happening, but for these communities, for Huron, Redfield, Brookings, Moody County, what kind of models can they look at next to say, what does our community need and how can we provide it?
Well, are they going to look at one of those volunteer options where a whole bunch of people get together and take little or no pay, most of them, maybe a paid editor or something? Will they, now I understand Dakota Scout was talking about dropping papers off in Brookings and trying to reach out to that community.
I see.
You probably remember when the Journal actually, or the Argus Leader, had bureaus in Brookings and Vermilion. That's kind of, I think, what they're talking about doing, 50 minutes away or whatever. I don't know. I really think, wouldn't you think, that Brookings, again, home
Brookings
of SDSU.
Brookings is a great example. SDSU is there. You cannot say that, and their radio station, I think,
they've
shut down,
too.
So, I mean, we have a boutique studio, SDPB does, in Brookings, so we can connect people. There's been some construction this year, so we haven't connected as much as we normally do, but we connect through the Brookings studio often and go up there often. So, you're covering the Jackrabbits, of course. You can put a newspaper together.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
But that's easy to say, and I don't know how to do it. So that's what, but you would hope that the people in the community are going to get together, and there are going to be some potential solutions to that.
You would hope it, and that was hopeful news from Josh that he put out on social media, hopefully before too long. But, what will Huron do? What will Redfield do?
Yeah.
What will Flander do? I don't know.
And you need ethical funding. So Columbia Journalism Review has been doing some work on, with nonprofits and with startups. There needs to be a model for ethical funding, and people need to be asking questions. When you donate money or you give to support something or there are shareholders involved, how do you protect the integrity of the news? And people are asking themselves those questions for the first time. And I remember freelancing for the Argus, you know, there was a very strong firewall. There's a very strong firewall at SDPB where, you know, the fundraisers or the ad salesmen at the Argus were doing very different work than what the reporters were doing. And we never spoke mm-hmm. to each other. Mm-hmm. And you made quite sure that there wasn't influence on the news. Those questions and those standards need to be upheld in the future. Not everyone knows what they are anymore. So that's an opportunity to learn about ethical funding in the nonprofit and for-profit news world.
Yeah, and at this point, when you have, you know, when you have people like Seth and Jack Marsh and Bart and those people that mm-hmm. have been in the traditional news media, newspaper primarily, you've got an institutional memory there that I would think would be pretty useful.
Yep.
I can remember at the Argus, an editor profanely throwing the advertising person out of his office because they came up to talk about how the news was affecting ad sales, and it was a fireworks display.
Yeah, and I got followed once by an ad person who was trying to figure out who I was interviewing so they could go in and try to sell ads afterwards. I don't think they had a job for very long.
Yeah. And I understand. I love them. I love ads people. But, you know, as you say, that's out of line.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
Yeah. What you said, institutional memory. And I think that is really important from the people who are leading journalism in the state right now. But for young people growing up, they might not ever have had a local newspaper.
Yeah.
And with journalism majors dropping in the state, like, that's a big problem in the future. If you never got one, you don't know what to expect. The news you get is coming through Facebook. That is a crisis for a civic life in South Dakota in the future. I'm not using hyperbole.
Yeah, I don't know what you tell a young person that's interested in journalism. If they ask me, should my daughter or my son choose this career? Should I, as the daughter and son speaking, choose this career? I don't know. I know so little about what's going on in the business today in terms of where it's heading.
Yeah.
I remember when I walk across the street to the bagel shop back when I was at the Journal, and I would look and there would be journals out being read all over at the tables and discussed. And I stopped one day and I loved that. And then I stopped one day and considered it and realized that all the readers had hair the same color as mine. Great. And the younger ones were on their phones.
Where they might have been reading the newspaper too.
Maybe, but I doubt it.
Okay. I'm more charitable than you, young people.
I'm skeptical, but maybe.
Yeah.
Because when I talk to a lot of the younger kids, they typically aren't reading newspapers. They think they get their news elsewhere. Some of them on sites, and some of them do. There are some sites where you can get pretty good news that aren't traditional newspaper sites, obviously. But I don't know where it's going. All I know is people need professionally produced news, whatever form it comes in. And I hope we can get young people, generations of young people, to believe that and to be willing to pay for that, however the pay. I always thought we would come up with something where you could pay per click, where you'd want to read a story and you could just do something and click it, and that would be a quarter or 30 cents a story on anything.
A la carte news, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how can they not do that? They can do everything else. But I thought of this 20 years ago, and they still don't do it. They just don't offer that.
Because the algorithm is designed not for that. Yeah.
Apparently.
The algorithm is designed to keep your eyeballs on the app for a certain period of time.
Yeah.
So they can't kick you out of that. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they could do that. They just don't want to do that.
Well, Kevin Wooster, we'll be talking about this in the future as long as we have it in the moment to talk about it with.
Yeah.
Where we can have long-form conversations here on public broadcasting and take a look around at the news in your local community and send us an email and tell us about it in the moment at sdpb.org. Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.